Money FM 89.3, best of prime time.
You're listening to Prime Time on Money FM 89.3. I'm Rachel Kelly, and now it's time for our weekly Inside Hong Kong with Claire Huang, where Straits Times correspondent Claire gives us the latest from the territory. Claire, thank you for joining us.
Hi, Rachel.
So we've got lots to catch up on today, don't we, Claire?
Yes, we do. A lot of things happening in this city.
So let's start with COVID-19, because Hong Kong reported 24 new COVID-19 cases yesterday, with 19 of them being local infections. And that stoked worries of a renewed community spread in the city after it had reported mostly imported cases for months. Claire, what else do we know about the cases?
So this morning, local media reported that there are at least another 10 new confirmed cases. Some of these cases are linked to a cluster, which is an elderly care home centre. Now, this is on top of the 24 announced yesterday, and the Centre for Health Protection has sounded the alarm because there might be a wider outbreak in the city as the new local cases come from a wide area, from the west, from Mong Kok, Hong Kong Island. We have so far more than 1,320 confirmed cases, excluding that 10. Okay, so of the 19 new local cases, the source for five of them remain unknown. Authorities have no clue how many hidden cases are out there, so they're now urging people to seek medical attention quickly if they feel ill. Now, we have a mini cluster in the elderly care home, as I mentioned, where residents and staff got the virus. And then there's another group of new patients linked to two separate outbreaks, both of which are restaurants. The authorities are saying, you know, maybe the public might want to switch to takeaway now instead of eating out. And I think from what they have said so far, we are looking at a possible tightening of social distancing measures.
So when do you think tightening of social distancing measures could come into play? What kind of timeline are we looking at? What kind of numbers would we need to see?
Well, the health experts in Hong Kong have urged the government to possibly tighten anti-epidemic measures, and this is the time to do so in case, more clusters pop up. So I am looking in the next few days when they decide on what exactly to do.
This is all taking place amidst, another big headline coming out of Hong Kong, and that is the national security law. What's the latest, and how are businesses responding to what's happening?
Microsoft and Zoom have joined Facebook, Google and Twitter to press pause in their consideration of requests by Hong Kong's government for information on the users, right? Mm. So the pause at Facebook and WhatsApp will remain in place pending further assessment, in the words of the Silicon Valley giant. It says that it's going to assess the formal human rights due diligence and consultations with human rights experts. Meanwhile, Google said it would review Hong Kong government requests for removals of user-generated content from its services. Even Beijing-owned TikTok says it's pulling out of Hong Kong. Okay, this united front by the social media giants, though, could prompt the government to block their sites in Hong Kong, which is basically a worst-case scenario, right? There's no negotiation anymore. And this could see them relocate. I think under the new law, whether or not the identification record or decryption key is located in Hong Kong doesn't quite matter. The police no longer require a warrant from magistrate to ask internet companies to hand over user data when it comes to a national security case. So we are looking at users here switching and downloading the messaging app Signal, which promises end-to-end encryption. And there's been a surge in the download in anticipation of possibility of a great firewall of the mainland, right, coming down. Yeah.
How does Signal work, Claire? I'm not that familiar with it. Is it just similar to a messaging app?
Signal is basically a more secure WhatsApp. But the messages are wiped out after a certain time. That's why Signal actually has said that, it doesn't give the government anything because there's nothing, no information or data to give the government.
Just going back to, and you mentioned relocating, and I know the last time we spoke, we discussed that perhaps it was too early to see some movements, but there have been, additional reports of foreign firms in Hong Kong surrendering more office spaces, Claire. What do we know so far?
Well, the triple whammy of last year's unrest, you've got the US-China souring ties, the pandemic, all these have led to multinational companies giving up more office space. And Cushman and Wakefield has said that the trend has pushed the city's vacancy rate to the highest in 15 years based on the information in the second quarter. Now, foreign companies made up 61% of the total surrender of office stock in the second quarter. This is up from 47% in the previous quarter. Logically, right, the trend is set to continue because the odds are stacked against Hong Kong's economy. You have recession here, you have the pandemic, which means work from home arrangements, which means companies are now wondering why they're taking up so much office space, because that's cost, and it's cost that comes at a time when global economy is down, business is down. And then there's the new security law, which adds to the uncertainty and adds to the gloomy outlook. So we are looking at office rents and going down, and the projection is that it would fall by about 20% central area.
From moving out to moving in, can you tell us more about the opening of the office for the agents that are housed in Metro Park Hotel in Causeway Bay?
This new base is expected to house 200 to 300 staff, intelligence agents, right? And it's a temporary arrangement. The significance of this location at Metro Park Hotel in Causeway Bay is that Causeway Bay is the heart of many demonstrations in the city over the years. It's opposite Victoria Park, which is a popular venue for rallies, including the annual vigil that marks the Tiananmen crackdown. And it's got, it's been a favorite place to hold pro-democracy protests. Now, at the ceremony, the new chief of the Office for Safeguarding National Security, Zheng Yanxiong, stressed that his agents will not infringe on the rights of residents. This was echoed by Beijing's liaison office chief, Luo Huining, while Chief Executive Carrie Lam hailed this as a historic moment. Now, this office is responsible for supervising and guiding local enforcers of the national security law. But now we have some lawmakers and some people in the finance and legal sectors have questions. What they say is the office's unsupervised powers, in essence, right? Agents wanting data for cases pertaining to national security can breach privacy and confidentiality. Now, this is something that privacy is something that Hong Kong has been very protective of. And right now, under this new law, right, the agents are not subject to local courts. They are not subject to local law enforcers.
We're speaking to Claire Huang, Straits Times correspondent for Hong Kong. Claire, can you tell us as well? I mean, this week we've also seen a number of bans come out, a ban on protest anthem in schools, and school students have been banned from singing Glory to Hong Kong, the unofficial anthem of the protest movement. How has this been received?
To go back a bit, right, Rachel, public library recently removed books by some prominent pro-democracy figures from their shelves. And then there was a ban that was placed on popular protest slogans. So this outright ban on the protest and anthem in schools is just an addition to the whole range of measures we are going to perhaps expect. Now, the Secretary for Education, Kevin Yong, yesterday banned students from singing, playing or broadcasting the protest anthem, right, on campus. Now, this ban also covers all other explicitly political songs. So what we're seeing is really getting everyone to fall in line. And while all these are happening, at the same time, the Civil Service Bureau also has developments. It has now suggested that all civil servants need to pledge allegiance to the Hong Kong government and declare to uphold the basic law. This, of course, comes as there were civil servants who organized rallies last year or who participated in anti-government demonstrations.
On the back of all of this, one thing we haven't really spoken about is how this new security law in Hong Kong compares to that of Macau's.
What I can tell you is this new law here is tougher than the one in Macau. Mm. But let me set the context, right? Okay. Macau enacted the law 11 years ago, and back then Beijing had a lot of trust in the gaming hub. It's still this. You compare this to Hong Kong, right, where the government struggled last year for long periods with a huge political crisis that it could not handle. And then you've got the defiance from the side of the protesters. So then the question begs, how could it have gone down well? Macau's version, passed by its own legislature in 2009, prohibits seven crimes. You know, you've got things like treason, sedition, subversion, theft of state secrets, blah, blah, blah. Hong Kong's version, okay, which has covers four areas, was enacted by Beijing, and it skipped Hong Kong's parliament altogether. And this is significant. And it's also significant in terms of structure, because the Hong Kong version has a Beijing advisor directing the chief executive. The city also now has a mainland agency tasked to oversee national security, which is led by three senior officials appointed by Beijing. So that's different. And then on top of that, another difference is that in Macau, the courts have jurisdiction over all local cases, except those related to defense and foreign affairs. In Hong Kong, it's specifically spelled out by Beijing that complicated national security cases are to be handled by Beijing. And also, Beijing did not need to require the Macau leader to designate judges like how they do it in Hong Kong, as a significant proportion of, you know, the lawyers in Macau were trained on the mainland.
Well, you know, Claire, there's so much that we can cover today for the national security law. But before we go, there's just one more topic that I wanted to bring up with you today. And that's been what's happening with the US dollar peg, because we did see shares of HSBC Holdings, which draws more than 2/3 of its pre-tax income from Hong Kong, and shares slumped as advisors to US President Donald Trump were said to be discussing a move to push banks in the city to destabilize the currency peg to the dollar. What's the latest? What do you know, Claire?
Let's start with the capping the ability of Hong Kong banks to buy US dollars. That's a nuclear option. Mm-hmm. Now, I know some analysts have warned that such a move would only hurt Hong Kong banks and the US. It wouldn't hurt China. Then I think we need to take a step back and look. A lot of China's monies go through Hong Kong, which is the offshore renminbi hub. It's not Shanghai, it's not Shenzhen. Now, this is against the backdrop of international norms. What are international norms? What are the other currencies pegged to? The greenback. How far-reaching is U.S. dollar clearing global? So in the event the U.S. moves to limit the amount of U.S. dollars Hong Kong banks can buy, would it really hurt U.S. more than Hong Kong and China? Now, compare this to, you know, this destabilizing the peg. That's perhaps, you know, upon comparison, not as bad an option as imposing restrictions on Hong Kong banks buying U.S. dollars for sure. Yes, there will be chaos at the start, but things will settle down. The Hong Kong dollar can still be, you know, free float or pegged to the renminbi as an alternative. But the key here that I want to make is that there is no upside but downside only to have to manage the Hong Kong dollar to be within the narrow band because of the peg to the U.S. dollar in the long term. Where's the upside? There's no upside.
Well, Claire, that's all we've got time for, you know, but I'm looking forward to catching up with you again next week, because there's just so much happening out of Hong Kong at the moment. So thank you so much for all of those updates.
Thank you, Rachel.
Thanks. You're listening to Primetime on Money FM 89.3. I'm Rachel Kelly, and this has been Inside Hong Kong with Claire Huang.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.